Are you looking for expert analysis and the latest news in the promotional products industry?
You must be, because you're listening to the Promo Marketing Podcast.
So I took my daughter to see the new Jack Black movie.
Oh, was it the one with the house with the clock in its walls?
House with the clock in its walls, yeah.
Yeah, was it any good?
So the movie was pretty good. My daughter's five, by the way. This plays into the story. I don't know if you've seen on some of these movies now, if you go to see them in theaters early on, there's like a PSA from the cast and crew at the beginning, and where they thank everybody for coming out to see the movie in theaters, and like, you know, they say thanks for seeing it on the way it was intended, stuff like that.
I guess to
prevent piracy and or give people a little bonus for going to check it out. So that comes on in the beginning, and turns out Eli Roth is the director.
Of this movie?
Of this movie. Now, this is a kid's movie. I don't know how much you guys at home know about Eli Roth, but he is the guy who directed Hostel and The Green Inferno, which is a movie about cannibalism.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that going in. I guess I should have done more research before I took my five-year-old to see
it. It's still like a kid's movie, though,
it's
right?
A kid's movie, but the whole time, because of that, I was worried that there was just going to be some kind of crazy
one
weirdness that was just going to pop up. So I'm sitting there like white knuckle gripping the armrests as this movie is unfolding, just waiting for just something crazy to happen.
That'd be something, like some real crazy switch. Like, hey, there's a family movie with Jack Black who's universally loved by children. Like,
right.
Surprise.
And the main character is a child.
Yeah,
in the movie.
I saw that.
I figured I was safe. And I'm happy to report that it was a perfectly fine movie and there was no cannibalism anywhere in it. But
spoilers, dude.
There were a few parts that pushed the envelope of weirdness a little bit.
There was a
demon in the forest that was looking all creepy. But
it's amazing how like things like that in children's shows can be really scary into adulthood. Things like you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, hey, remember that cartoon when you were nine that had that weird like scary part out of nowhere. Let's think about that.
Yeah, and that's I'm sure this movie has scarred my daughter for life, so sorry about that.
It's healthy. It's like building an immunity, you know. You have to get scared a little bit.
That's just a heads up for all you parents out there. Check the director of your movies before you go, so you don't have to deal with that. But welcome everybody to the Promo Marketing Podcast. I am Sean Norris, editor-in-chief of Promo Marketing. With me, as always, Brendan Menapace, Senior Digital Editor. Brendan, what's going on today?
Well, a few shows back, we talked to Parker Melvin from Gold Star Pens, who switched from the supplier side to the distributor side. For this episode, we thought it'd be fun to look at the distributor end to an end buyer switch.
Yeah, so our guest today is Jeff Laniato, who worked in sales for a couple of promo distributors, including Axis Promotions, before taking a job at CBS. Where he handles the promo buying for all the network's TV programming, award shows, sporting events, all that good stuff. We talked to Jeff about why he made the switch and how his knowledge of the inner workings of the industry, the promo industry, informs his decision making as a promo buyer. And we asked him what he thinks distributors are doing well and doing poorly, and we got into some other stuff. It was a really good conversation.
It was a really good conversation. I think it's something that you don't read about too much in industry publications, and I'm glad we got to talk to him about it. And it's always good, you know, like to have the tips from, like, obviously CBS is a huge account for anyone, and these are big time customers, so it's good to have someone explain, this is exactly what I'm looking for,
right?
This is exactly what we want, this is exactly how we operate, so you can really tailor your pitch and all of that approach like accordingly.
Yeah, and that was one of the best parts of the conversation too, as you'll see, is Jeff gets a little bit into what he's looking for coming from a large client as far as promo buying, and you know, maybe that, you know, hopefully that'll give some insights to other distributors listening on how to land some of those large accounts.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, that we got to get into this story, which I think you probably all know is coming because you couldn't possibly avoid it if you wanted to over this past week or so. But we got to talk about Gritty.
We got to talk about Gritty as taxpaying. Well, I'm a taxpaying Philadelphia, near a taxpaying New Jersey resident.
Right. We are based in the Philadelphia area. Promo Marketing's headquarters is in Philadelphia. We are mostly all huge Philadelphia Flyers fans. Gritty, this was the week that Gritty took over the world.
He really did. And it was really strange. Like, it came out and I was like, okay, that's fun. The kids seem excited. This is what it should be.
So before we go into it, I think we need to establish a timeline here. That might be the best way to do it, because there were a bunch of milestones, and to fully understand Gritty, we need to put it all together.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
So Monday morning, the Flyers announce Gritty. It's a, this big unveiling event. They bring in a bunch of kids. I think it was at the Police Touch Museum in Philadelphia.
Yep.
So it's like a kid-friendly museum.
All the kids got T-shirts.
All the kids got T-shirts. It's super cool. Hyped it up. Gritty comes out. I saw this via text message from my buddy who's a huge Flyers fan, and my first reaction was I just started laughing uncontrollably. It was incredible. And I, right after that, I embraced Gritty.
I think
Gritty rules.
He did exactly what a mascot's supposed to do, which is make kids excited and just be silly and just make everyone laugh.
And he got everybody talking about him because
exactly.
The next thing that happened was Gritty starts trending on Twitter.
Yep.
Which is insane when you think about it because it's the mascot for a hockey team, which it's not even really hockey season yet. And it's hockey. It's the fourth, maybe fifth most popular professional sport in America.
Depending on the week.
Depending on the week. And here we have on a Monday afternoon, Gritty is trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
He gets so popular, picks up so much momentum. Good Morning America schedules him for a last second spot the following morning.
That was really weird. I saw that they must have really like someone must have Matt Damon must have dropped out or something that they had like
we gotta fill Damon's spot. We gotta get somebody in here quick. Let's check Twitter who's trending right now. What is this Gritty? Like, bring him in.
Well, let's backtrack a day. Shortly after the unveiling, all the other mascots on Twitter
were
tweeting at him, some embracing him. The Penguins mascot obviously was not a huge fan, but he clapped back immediately, which instantly earned him a spot in every Philadelphia fan.
This was the
heart.
Defining moment that really just
– That was
– It set it in stone that I was going to love Gritty, and I know it did for a lot of other people. But what do you say? It was like the Penguins mascot said something about how ridiculous and stupid he was. And he said,
sleep with one eye open tonight, bird.
Which is great because Gritty, as you've seen, is extremely creepy and weird. Would be right at home in an Eli Roth movie, I think.
He would, yeah. I could see that.
So that was great. And the Flyers, to their credit, there's no way they could have planned for this. As we've talked about before with other brands, seizing the momentum of viral marketing, the Flyers just took this and ran with it. And it's been just a daily barrage of Gritty since then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you had the next up was the T-shirt cannon incident.
Yeah.
His first appearance on the ice, he slips and falls, which also went viral.
Yeah.
Everybody loves when people slip and fall, especially mascots. It's funny. There's whole YouTube channels devoted to it.
You could practically hear the sound effect, like the whoop.
And then he fires the T-shirt gun into the guy's back, which again, you can't plan for this stuff.
No, it just all worked out so well. Like the fact that it's been 5 days now and he's already like, I'd say neck and neck with the Fanatic in terms of just universal love of Philadelphia. And the Fanatic has had decades to earn this.
And it's just that kind of marketing goodwill that the Flyers have built up now, and it was just so fortuitous that it's happened. But again, they have capitalized on it. One of our editors here, Joe, went to the Flyers game Thursday night. He was on the hunt for Gritty merchandise. He said there wasn't any yet, which that struck me as a little odd that they wouldn't have rushed some stuff out. But you got to believe that that's coming.
Oh, 100%. I think that shows they didn't quite.
Yeah, they weren't
coming.
Fully prepared for.
Our music's popping in. Hold on.
Oh, hey, welcome to the show.
Yeah, no, that's our wrap it up music. But
are we running that far ahead? No, I don't know.
No. It's just at the end of the thing.
Oh,
it's
fine. Anyway, welcome to the Promo Marketing Podcast.
I'm your host, Gritty.
But yeah, so Gritty rules. The staff, promo marketing staff, is. I'd say 85% in favor of Gritty.
Yeah, we even turned the one naysayer around yesterday. Jim's on Team Gritty now.
We got Jim Harvey of print and promo fame on board.
It didn't take a lot. It just took like a pretty lively discussion and then a little few minutes of self-reflection in his office.
Well, like we said to him, you don't want to be on the wrong side of history when it comes to gritty. Like you just gotta get on. There's room on the bandwagon. Yeah.
History will remember where you were during the gritty wars.
So we'll see how far the Flyers will take this and you know how far it goes. Like anything viral, it's gonna die down. I wonder if they'll be able to maintain some kind of momentum from this in the same way that let's say, you know, Bud Light has with its Dilly Dilly stuff that we've covered in detail. It'll be cool to see what the Flyers do to keep it going. They've got a golden opportunity here. Hopefully they get some merchandise together. I, for one, would really like to purchase a gritty t-shirt.
There'll be stuffed animals. There'll be t-shirts. There'll be everything.
Yeah, you'll get Gritty Beard Night where you get a mask and beard with the googly eyes and everything.
I like that idea.
I mean, that guys... Flyers brass, if you're listening, it's $1 million idea right there.
That I would go to that.
Send checks to Sean Norris at Promo Marketing.
I think that they'd be incredibly stupid to not milk this, but there's that fine line between riding that popularity and really just beating a dead horse.
Right. Team Gritty all the way. Hashtag Team Gritty. What else we got going on in the marketing world this week? Anything big? I know Dunkin' Donuts dropped the Dunkin' from its name. Dropped the Donuts
they
from
dropped
its
the
name.
Donuts.
They're just Donuts
They're just
now.
Donuts now. The artist formerly known as Dunkin'.
They dropped the Donuts from its name, so they'll just be known as Dunkin'. This has been in the works for a little while. I know they had a couple of pilot programs at a few stores in the Boston area where they're based, where they dropped the name already.
Yeah.
Streamlined name. Lets them kind of branch out and explore more areas. I know they're trying to get into more of a direct competition with Starbucks, where they don't want to be known as the donut place anymore. They want to be known as everything.
Yeah, that's what Domino's did too. They dropped pizza, so now they're just Domino's to hype up their whatever else they make. I'm not a Domino's guy.
Well, Domino's is a tech company now. They've got the whole
e-commerce
thing, and they've got the pizza tracker.
Yeah, and they're rivaling PennDOT and replacing potholes.
That's right. They've replaced more potholes in Philadelphia than PennDOT.
Dude, I don't know if you've walked through this neighborhood much, but the streets have been torn up for months, and they just haven't repaved them.
If anybody has no idea what we're talking about, we ran this story a little while back. Domino's Pizza was paving potholes somewhere with Domino's branded pothole fill-ins,
yep,
which is fantastic marketing.
It is really cool. So Domino's, if you're listening, it's the Green Street between 20th and 15th that really need to be paved.
Dispatch that. We need a Domino's pothole fill pizza tracker
stat
hybrid. So Dunkin' did that. That was a big story earlier. Last week, we ran a story about how the move has already let them do some cool things with their branding. I thought it was really neat that their cups, they've got the small, medium, and large. Each one of those features a different logo treatment.
Yeah, I like that.
That was pretty cool. The small cup kind of stacked it broke the logo into a square shape to fit the smaller squat size of the small cup. They dropped the vowels for the small and the medium size cups, and then they just did a bunch of different cool things, different logo variations, and it was just kind of a preview of what they'll be able to do in the future with the logo change.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think just dropping the name it's obviously a huge move, but you have to take that next step and kind of amp up your image a little bit too, and they did a good job with that without overdoing it.
And they've got a whole bunch of branded merchandise as most places do in store. The Dunkin' right below us, below our headquarters, they've got a whole table spread with stuff out
there.
They do. Tumblers and gift baskets and all that good stuff. So we'll see how that changes over and see what Dunkin' ends up doing with that. So before we get to the interview, just a quick housekeeping item. We just launched a new website for Power Meetings, our 3.5-day events where distributors and suppliers meet one-on-one in fabulous resort locations and do all kinds of crazy business building. The new site's a sleek, state-of-the-art, easy to navigate for the best possible user experience. If you guys have been to one of our Power Meetings events, or if you haven't but you're interested in learning what they're all about, go check out the new digs at pmpowermeetings.com. We had a lot of folks who worked really hard to put this together. It came out great, so go give it a look for yourself.
Yeah, and the site has the Power Meetings schedule on there, so you can view all 5 events we have coming up for 2019, including not one but 2 powerhouse events, which are like powered-up versions of our core Power Meetings. You know in Super Mario Brothers when you get the star power and you're invincible and you can do anything and it plays that fun song? This is the powerhouse meeting is that. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And Mario Kart, too. We'd be remiss to not mention Mario Kart.
Who doesn't want to be powered up? So go check out the new website at pmpowermeetings.com. Give it a look and maybe come join us at one of the events.
All right, so now that we took care of that, it's time for our interview with Jeff Laniato. Jeff is with CBS on the end buyer side after a career on the distributor side of the promotional products industry.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're fantastic. We're in here in the new studio. Things are looking good. So can you just start by introducing yourself and giving us a little bit of background on your history in the promotional products industry?
Sure. So my name is Jeff Laniato. I've been kind of in and around the industry for about 6 or 7 years now. I ended up in the industry kind of by accident, like a lot of people do. It's actually a quick, funny story. I was applying for internships. I was a marketing student in college. I got an interview with this company, a really small distributorship in New Jersey. Went to their website to learn more about the company. And it was basically set up like a web store. You know, they had mugs, t-shirts, backpacks, all that stuff. I went in for the interview and it was a very small office, 3 or 4 women in a commercial building in New Jersey. And I answer all the basic interview questions. And, you know, the president of the company asked at the end, "Do you have any questions, Jeff?" And I said, "Yeah, where is everything?" I didn't, I didn't understand that, you know, that I was kind of, just showed how naive I was and how little I knew about this whole promo industry when I first got started. And, you know, I ended up spending about 1.5 years there. She kind of, I got acclimated with everything, learned the vendors, learned the whole process, basically was doing admin work. When I graduated college, I took a full-time job at a larger distributor in New Jersey, Progressive Promotions, and wore a lot of different hats there, worked in inside sales, did some account management, really cut my teeth while I was working there and learned a lot. Ended up going to Axis. Axis Promotions, a top 40 distributor in New York City. I was there for about 1 year. I was supporting an account executive, but also I started to work on bringing in my own business and developing accounts, cold calling, mailers, really trying to just bring in new logos and grow my book of business. I was there for less than 1 year when I was reached out to by a recruiter at CBS, the television network, and they were looking for somebody to come on board and basically manage all of the buying of their promotional needs. Came in for a couple interviews, ended up sounding like a good opportunity, and that was about 3 years ago, and I've been managing all of the promotional needs of CBS since.
So coming from your side of like the distributor side of things, what was the most challenging aspect of your new role as an end buyer for CBS?
So, there's a lot of, they reached out to me because of my experience, and I feel like it's an advantage, but it can also be a disadvantage in a lot of ways. One of the challenges is that, you know, I've been to all the trade shows. I know all the vendors that the distributors are working with. I've seen the catalogs. I know the products. So I feel like I tend to get a little bit jaded, maybe. I'm not your typical end user. It's tough to get me excited about new items. A lot of the times I feel like I've seen most of what's out there. So that's part of the challenge. You know, I have to remind myself that people really do get excited about promotional products. People really do enjoy, you know, getting giveaways or incentive programs, or it can be a really useful marketing tool. And, you know, just having been in the business, I feel like sometimes I lose sight of that.
You've seen too much.
Yeah. I've seen too much.
You've seen how the sausage
exactly.
is made.
Right.
So we've talked to others in the past who've gone from, you know, made jumps like this, especially from the supplier side to the distributor side and vice versa. But going from distributor to end buyer, we haven't really delved into that at all. Having your experience as a distributor, what knowledge or experience do you use the most in your current role that other end buyers might not?
That's a really good question. I would say the biggest component of my experience that I incorporate into my job now as a buyer is that I really understand the dynamic between the distributor and the supplier and the factory. I feel like, I don't know percentage-wise, I'd say over half of end buyers maybe don't really understand the relationship and the whole supply chain. I think a lot of people assume that the distributors are the actual ones who are housing the water bottle and they're printing the product in their office, and they might not necessarily understand that it's really coming from a supplier and kind of that whole dynamic. And, you know, to just be very straightforward, when I took this job with CBS, I thought that I would be going direct a lot more. I kind of came into the role and I thought wow, this is great. I have all these relationships with these suppliers and I know where everything is coming from, and I'm going to be able to save CBS 30-40% by just going direct and, you know, going straight to the supplier. But to be honest, I really haven't done any of that. I've seen the value of the distributors. And but having said that, I do still take advantage of my knowledge of the suppliers. Just to give you an example, if I have a project, I go right to the leads website, the hit website myself, and I'll, you know, distributors will get an email from me and it'll say, you know, can we see a sample of item 1, 2, 3 from hit and item 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from leads. You know, it's definitely a little bit different than I'm sure how the process is
right
elsewhere.
You think that makes their job any easier?
You know, it's funny, a lot of distributors, they still try to kind of have that secrecy about where the product is coming from. But I do think it makes their job easier. And, you know, another example, if they're, let's just say I get an item, it's a water bottle and we like it, but we want to maybe find it in another color, and I know it's from Gary Line, I'll go right to the Gary Line website and I'll find that item and I'll see what other colors it comes in. And I save my distributor, you know, just the back and forth or the phone call and the correspondence of them having to check a lot of the supplier websites. You can check inventory in real time, and I take advantage of that, and it kind of saves that phone call, it saves that email. So I do think it's an advantage. Also, just in terms of expectations, I'm sure there are a lot of end users out there who might think that t-shirts can be done in 24 hours, and you know, you can do a four color process on an item that it's not really feasible. So I feel like having that knowledge, it is advantageous to the distributor as well.
So obviously CBS is a pretty big name, so for distributors that's a big get in terms of clients. When you're looking for distributors to work with, what do you look for, and what can distributors looking to land a big name client like CBS do to stand out and get that account?
Absolutely. So this is one of the questions I get a lot, especially from my friends on the distributor side. You know, I've gotten some unique insight into really how competitive it is out there. My phone rings almost every day. I'm getting emails almost every day, and I see how challenging it really can be to stand out and to get in the door at a company like CBS or any other big company. And, you know, it gets kind of beaten to death, but customer service really is what differentiates the bad distributors from the good distributors and the great ones from the good ones. And, you know, customer service that means responsiveness, that means transparency, really just communicating effectively and being able to trust that the order is in good hands. You know, the main thing I look for, what I really care about is I want to look good for my clients, my internal team, whether it's for HR, whether it's for marketing or events or whoever the project's for. All I really care about is making myself look good. And just as, you know, if a factory screws up an order, the distributor can't just blame it on the factory and kind of dodge all responsibility. It works the same way with me. If I miss an event and my events team is mad at me, I can't just kind of deflect any accountability and say, well, it's my distributor that really messed up here. You know, I really have to kind of take accountability, and I have to make sure that I'm putting all of my projects in the hands of a distributor that I trust. And that really comes down to customer service. I mean, the products, for the most part, I know that anyone can really get me the product. You know, that's not necessarily true once we get into overseas and different product, but for the most part, it's the same. So what I really look for is a distributor that I can trust, and that's going to make me look good.
Kind of on the other side of the coin, you know, what are some things that distributors do wrong when they're trying to get into accounts, you know, bigger, especially bigger ones? And are there any ways they can avoid those kind of mistakes and improve on their approaches? Like, what have you seen in particular?
Well, kind of expanding on what I was saying before, you know, competing on price is, from my perspective, not really the way to win business. I have no problem paying a 35-40%+ margin if it means, you know, working with a distributor that I really feel strongly about. It really kind of goes back to what I was saying before about how does the distributor add value in addition to just the product. So that can mean, you know, I have a lot of vendors that I work with that will offer custom packaging options, that will offer different decoration options, and really just kind of offer an ability to differentiate themselves, not just the product, you know, kind of the value add-on services. That's what really makes those vendors stand out. I found that, you know, being face-to-face is also a huge element of of this whole process. You know, the reality is that I'm more likely to buy from somebody that I've met. And having said that, one of the big don'ts in my book is, you know, if I have a new vendor that comes in and they get a face-to-face meeting and I meet them in the lobby, and if they have a big suitcase, I know it's going to be a bad time. I know I'm going to spend the next 30 minutes just watching them pull out samples, and chances are I know where all those samples are from. And it's kind of funny seeing the look on their face when I say, oh, that's the new ETS bottle, right? Or, you know, wherever it's from. But for the most part, you know, I don't mind seeing a few new samples, but for the most part, I just want to hear about the process behind the distributor and, you know, how that company's going to differentiate themselves in terms of customer service and responsiveness and custom packaging, add-ons, everything that kind of is additional.
Yeah, and it's good to hear you say that too, because we kind of preach that all the time here and on our magazine and on our online and everything that we do. It's like, you know, those are the two biggest things, you know, customer service and maintaining those kind of face-to-face lines of communication. Those seem to us, and you know, as we've heard from other folks too, those are the biggest ways that distributors can really compete and differentiate themselves from some of the big dogs out there that are you know, gunning for the industry, so to speak. You know, you got Amazon kind of always slowly lurking in the background,
sure,
waiting to make its move. And you know, Walmart's got promotional products now, et cetera. As far as your experience with this compared to, you know, your typical buyer, how do you think it you know, the other buyers, what do you think they're looking for? Is it along the similar lines? I know you can't speak for anybody else, but.
That's a good question, right? I think it's probably other buyers are maybe more focused on product than I am. Like I said, maybe they're a little bit less jaded and more into what actually is being given out, as opposed to all the kind of extras, which is more of what I'm concerned with. You know, just having seen everything, I feel like the product is going to be, you know, equal across all distributors, at least in theory it should be. And I think a lot of buyers don't understand that. You know, even my boss, sometimes I'll take a project to her and I'll explain, oh, you know, I know we like this bottle ABC from this factory, but it doesn't come in green. And she'll be like, well, can you see if this other distributor can get it in green? And I know that they're making the same phone call to the same supplier, you know, so people don't really necessarily understand that whole dynamic.
Yeah, the supply chain is
yes.
It's funny because we have a flow chart that we made like years ago, and it just gets passed down whenever we hire a new writer or editor over here, you know, who doesn't have any industry experience, we pass
right.
It to them. It's kind of like a rite of passage, and it's got, you know, seven different areas on it, where it's factories overseas, supplier, distributor, and buyer,
right.
End user, what have you. And it's just, you know, it's become a thing around here. So we totally understand how that kind of difficulty in understanding the supply chain might translate to the buyers.
Absolutely. And kind of going back to what you were saying before in terms of just do's and don'ts, you know, a couple more thoughts. I get a lot of e-blasts, you know, the email marketing. And I know there's probably a lot of companies that put a lot of resources into that, but from my perspective, it's a little spammy. I can't really unsubscribe quickly enough. I can't say that I've ever placed an order based off of an e-blast. But having said, you know, just because it seems not gimmicky, but a little bit, it might be going to 1,000 other companies or 100 other end users. It just doesn't feel targeted, doesn't feel specialized, but at the same time, if I get an email from a distributor and they say, hey Jeff, we just found this new charger, we think CBS would really like it, and there's a virtual proof with the CBS, you know, a mock-up with the logo on it, and you know, can we send you a sample, and it's targeted and it's specialized, it feels different than the email blast that I get a lot of. It's just a completely different feeling when it's more personalized. And you know, the same thing goes for spec samples. I you know, spec samples are a huge way to get in the door for a new vendor. It shows that they want to earn the business. You know, you have to kind of go out of your way to make a spec sample. It's so much different than an e-blast or even a blank sample where you can kind of just spam any prospects you have. When you take your time, when you go out of your way to put the CBS logo on a product, send it to me, follow up with an email, it really shows that this vendor is willing to go out of their way to work with us, and they really want to earn the business, and it really makes them stand out.
Right, and that ties in with the customer service aspect that you were
sure.
talking about before.
So,
absolutely.
You like what you said, you don't when a distributor comes in and kind of like with the suitcase, like you said, it can be kind of a waste of your time since you know the ins and outs of this already, but obviously they come in with their pitch planned as if you don't. So my question is, obviously without knowing the end buyer in advance, are you kind of a rarity in the world, or do you know a lot of other people who went from the distributor side who are now in end buyer positions?
I don't know anyone who has made this transition, to be honest. So it's tough to really gauge, what the consensus is. I don't really know anyone who's gone to this side of the business. I would be interested to know if other people feel the same way that I do. And I would imagine that people who don't have industry experience maybe are a little bit more interested in the products being pulled out of the suitcase. Although I feel like that will kind of over time, you learn the products and you kind of develop that sense of being jaded and you start to care more about how do I look good and, you know, all the extras.
Cool. So that's about everything we had for you. Is there anything else you want to add that we haven't asked about?
One of the do's that I wanted to throw out there and kind of just highlight, it's interesting. You know, people are always competing to get an in-person meeting. And I know this might come off as a little bit, kind of shallow, or I've never said no to a lunch. A lunch is a great way to get in the door and to get my undivided attention for an hour. If you want to come in and show me product, there's a million people who want to show me product, and there's a good chance that it's going to be that boring suitcase meeting that I talked about. But I don't think I've ever said no to a distributor who wants to get lunch. And it's not, and it could be a $12 sandwich across the street. It's really, it's not even about that, but it's just about a company taking the time to show CBS attention and to show us that they really want to earn the business. And from their perspective, they get an hour of my time undivided to learn what our challenges are and to learn how they can help. And it's a great way for any distributor to get in the door, whether it's coffee or lunch or bring donuts or, kind of just showing that they're willing to go out of their way and, show you what they can do.
Yeah, donuts are the answer to everything.
Yeah, I've never turned down donuts either.
Nobody says no. Yeah, exactly.
Very cool, man. Well, thanks again so much for joining us on the show today. This was great. And, it really brings a unique perspective, something that we haven't been able to explore much. And hopefully this will give everybody listening a better idea of how the process works and what to expect.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Thanks again, Jeff. Take care. So that was our interview with Jeff. I thought it was really fun how he was talking about the suitcase full of promo items.
Yeah. I always pictured it like kind of spring-loaded, like just like popping up or like in
it's what's, got multiple little compartments that pop out.
Was it Halloween Town where the grandma could just like pull out all the stuff out of her bag like endlessly?
Dude, I wasn't big on the Halloween Town.
I wasn't a Disney Channel guy, but that's one of the few that I've like committed to memory.
I was more of a Hocus Pocus guy. I don't know if they're mutually exclusive, but
I don't think they are. I liked them both.
But yeah, that's a really good takeaway. I mean, it's important here to qualify that Jeff is speaking from a really unique viewpoint that you're not going to get with every buyer that you're working with. I mean, I would venture to guess that most of these buyers are not going to have prior promo industry experience, especially as distributors. So he's, he is kind of, I wouldn't assume that every buyer is going to have that same reaction to.
And he says he doesn't really know anyone else in his position.
Exactly.
So.
But it's still good advice to, in general, just to make sure that your pitches aren't fully product focused. As we said a million times, and as we'll say a million more, you don't want to sell product. You want to sell solutions. As cliched as that can sound, it's the truth, and that's what we hear from everybody who is good at what they do in this industry. And that, if anything, what Jeff told us just kind of drives that home.
Yeah, and if you're wondering whether your prospect has a lot of knowledge in the industry or none at all, just ask what their history is with promotional products and ask what they know about it. And if they say, I was a distributor for 20 years, you'll know how to approach the subject. And if they say, I don't know the first thing about anything, well, then maybe that's when you bring the suitcase full of items.
Right. And that's good advice in general, is to just, get to know your buyers, get to know the client in general, and don't just try to offer a one-size-fits-all solution where you're just throwing samples out there the time.
Ultimately, it's a conversation anyway. You would want to ask the person you're talking to what they know about the subject anyway.
Exactly. How you deal with any person in any kind of relationship.
And as we've said before, relationships in this industry are important.
Have we ever said that?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. That's the first time. So that just about does it for this episode. If you guys like what you heard, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Play. And be sure to subscribe on promomarketing.com, Google Play, Apple Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you have any tips or comments, send them our way at promo_marketing on Twitter.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, for Brendan Menapace, I'm Sean Norris, and this is the Promo Marketing Podcast.